The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. Johnny Depp and the language of the left. We need to start there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The guys are trying to stop me from giving you a sports analogy. I don't know why.
Yeah, oh,
why?
Oh,
why?
Well, we've had many complaints from listeners.
Yeah,
apparently you did a six-minute sports analogy last night.
Oh, I don't know if it was a full 6 minutes,
that
and I thought it was
ugly.
Beautiful.
Well,
I did it.
Look, you did.
Look, here's the thing. If you want to understand the world today, I just have to go back to the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, last night I was just saying, look, we look at the San Francisco 49ers, 1972. And, you know, I just came up with a quick football analogy that the 49ers are playing the Washington Huskies. And they're going.
Yeah, in 1972.
It might have been 73. Anyway,
it's not going to be positive. So,
it's really good. You got to hear it. Because if you want to understand why Johnny Depp said what he said yesterday or earlier this week, he's at some film festival overseas. When did we just drop the idea that you could say whatever you want overseas? Didn't we also? We used to have this thing of, hey, you can trash our country here, but don't trash our country overseas.
Yeah.
Say it here. We keep our dirty laundry here.
That seemed to end with Barack Obama.
Yeah. And
that
then
sure did.
And then the other thing that we've kind of changed on is, we can call for the president's assassination. Listen to Johnny Depp.
Can we bring Trump here?
Now, what he just said, let's play this in chunks so you clearly understand. He's over in London.
He's about to introduce his 2004 movie, The Libertine.
And he says, can't we bring Donald Trump here? And they kind of cheer and boo at the same time.
No, you've misunderstood completely.
Just give him
no, 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 he's saying, no. I think you misunderstand.
Rehabilitation.
I think he needs help.
I think he needs help. They start to laugh.
It's going to be in the press. It'll be horrible.
I miss that.
It's going to be in the press. It's going to be horrible.
Okay.
But I'd like that you're all a part of it. When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
When was the last time an actor assassinated the president?
Wow. That's
all right. There's
amazing.
More. And I want to just make sure
I'm not an actor.
I want to make sure you understand I'm not an actor. I lie for a living. That's where all the tapes cut off.
Yeah, his next line is pretty chilling, too, because he says, however, it's been a while and maybe it is time.
So he is actively calling for the assassination of the president of the United States.
And actually kind of implying that he's going to do it because he's an actor.
I have to tell you, the left is so far over the line, and this will not hurt his career. I questioned the president's motives on what he was doing based on his own words in his book where he said, that's just the way white people will do you. It's part of the white culture. And then when I said something about he doesn't like the white culture, they all said, explain that. What do you mean by white culture? Oh, I don't know. Read the president's book. Ask him what he meant about the white culture. And when I said, I don't know, I think the president has a race problem. He has a real deep-seated hatred for the white culture. That damn near destroyed my entire career. And I was basing that on his words, on his actions, and his book.
Yeah, this was shortly after the she's a typical describing his grandmother as a typical white person who has certain biases
bred into her. Okay, so I said those.
How did he survive that? It's one of the amazing mysteries of this era.
So I say that on television. Now I know how it's taken. I know how it's heard. I walk it back. I apologize. I explain. Listen to read the president's book. But I understand. I shouldn't have said it. I shouldn't have said it that way. There was a much more artful way. Instead of saying like that, because I was just thinking out loud, which is really bad. No, let me say that. It's a really bad habit to have, or have that be your natural trait when you do what I do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad. And I should have said, instead of sitting there on the couch like a know-it-all, I should have said, you know, I've been reading the president's book, and he talks about his grandmother being a typical white person with things, behaviors, and fears bred into her. You look at some of the policies that he's doing. You look at some of the things that he said about the country, like A, B, and C. Then you, again, go back and match his words where he says, that's just the way white people will do you. The problem, the president has some antipathy towards America, or perhaps, according to his words, white people. But I haven't figured that out because I don't want to believe that. Now, that's the way I should have said it. It still would have been a firestorm. But that is the way, that's what I was feeling inside. I'm trying to figure this out, and I just blurted out. This guy is now calling for the president's assassination to cheers. And it will not affect his career at all. I will tell you that I was going to go take my son, who wants to see Pirates of the Caribbean, really bad. But I will not spend a dime on any movie with Johnny Depp saying those things about any president. I wouldn't have given a dime to somebody if somebody would have called for President Obama's assassination. You do not call for assassinations. And they always tried to make it seem like I was calling for assassinations. They would always try to take your words and the Tea Party's words and make it look like you were calling for attempts at violence, etc. These people are actually calling for violence. Now, I want to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back and tell you. Last night, I'm going to start doing these every Wednesday, just call-in shows, an hour of taking your phone calls on the Blaze TV. And I need to listen to you. And I need to hear from you. And I have specific questions. And next week, I'm going to do a show, I think it's on Wednesday, just on radio, of just taking phone calls. And I have specific questions. And I'm going to post them at glennbeck.com a couple of days before. We're going to talk about them a couple of days before. And then I want to hear your answers on Wednesday. And I'm going to continue to do this because, A, we have to start listening to you. And you'll understand why I said that. If you watched last night's show on the Blaze TV, if you're a member of the Blaze TV. But I am going someplace very, very specific, and I think you're going to be very excited about it. Not everybody's going to believe in it or want to go there, but I do believe after the people that I have talked to, the people that I have worked with, I've worked with this now for about 2 months solid, have been, you know, really hot on its trail for almost 5 months now. And we're still a couple of months away from having it fully baked. But there needs to, this is a pivot point. And we are going to either pivot and say what Malcolm X said was true. And that is, the time for words is over and it's time to swing back. And Malcolm X had a much more righteous reason for punching back than, quite honestly, we do now. Only because of decades of abuse. You want to talk about a long train of usurpations? Malcolm X could make that case. We can say that there's been a long line of problems, but not like he could. Martin Luther King said, no, 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 no. Stop trying to win. Once you stop trying to win and you look for reconciliation, you'll be able to change things. Now, here's where the sports analogy comes in, and I'm going to share two things with you.
Oh, no.
Yes, I'm going to. Washington, I'm telling you, Washington Huskies and the San Francisco 49ers. So, and by the way, I grew up in Seattle. I know that the Huskies don't play the 49ers, okay? They're in different cities. So, this is where this comes in. I want to talk to you about the winning strategy of the 49ers from the 70s and why that applies to today, and then show you the beginnings of the way out, but why we have to have these conversations over and over and over again, because it's a very complex road on getting out. But if we work together, and even if it's only 1 million people out of the 50 million that listen to us and watch us and read us every month, if we're consistent, us and you, we will change the course of the country. But it's going to be hard, really hard. But it's not just, hey, let's go give some people a sweater. Although that does play a role. But it's our language more than anything else. And we'll talk about that coming up in just a second. First, let me tell you about Mercury Real Estate. Have I told you Stephanie's story yet? Stephanie and her husband had a hard decision to make when her husband's work offered a transfer. That meant leaving their home for 24 years, leaving their children and their grandchildren. And it was a really emotional move. Stephanie is a listener, by the way. Hi, Stephanie. Thank you so much for listening to us. She's a listener. So to help with this move, she decided we're going to reach out to realestateagentsitrust.com. And realestateagentsitrust.com returned her call within the hour, and her agent is Ashley. And Ashley is listening, and Stephanie found somebody who is a lot like her. And that's the point of realestateagentsitrust.com. These are all vetted by my team, these real estate agents. They don't work for me. We just vet them. We find them. We vet them. They're listeners of this program. They believe in the same kinds of things that you do. So when Ashley and Stephanie got on the phone, they prayed together. They laughed together. Ashley got the home sold as quick as lightning. And it was a good experience. I don't know why people feel in business that I have to screw you or lie to you. Why can't it be a good experience for everybody involved? Why can't we just do business and make a transaction where everybody wins? You can if you just set your mind to it as a business. And that is the business of realestateagentsitrust.com. You need to sell your home or buy a home. realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now. realestateagentsitrust.com.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Now, for those of you at home, I would like you to envision a football field. And I would like you to envision that everybody's at the 50-yard line. The line of scrimmage is at the 50-yard line, and the Huskies have the ball, and they are now advancing towards the 49ers end zone. Okay, so in 1973, was it Bill Walsh that was the
not that long ago? No, no, Walsh came around in 79, I believe.
In the 80s,
79, 80.
When all of us.
No, I don't think so. But Anyway, whatever.
This is pre-49ers being good, if you're talking 1973. They weren't good
yet.
Yes, 79.
Right. This is what got them to be good. This is what got them to be good.
Okay? He came along in 79.
Okay, so maybe it's 1979. I don't know. I'm not a football expert.
Really?
All I'm trying to do is
wait
get
a minute.
To this.
What? You're not
All
a football expert?
Shut up. All I'm trying to do is get to this one point, take it out of football, and take it into what's happening at our line of scrimmage every single day. What is happening with the left media and the right media? What's happening with the conversations in America? We take the ball and we run head in, thinking we're going to beat the other side and plow through the other side and then run for a touchdown. And what happens? We're just getting people on the line of defense bigger and bigger and bigger.
The line of defense.
Shut up.
No, I'm just making sure I understand.
we're learning.
If you guys
want,
if you guys would like to help me instead of just critique me, that would be helpful.
Well, if you would have told us where this was headed, we could have done that. But we're not sure what your analogy is.
As friends, you could just help me now. Or, I am telling you now.
Or we could watch you squirm and suffer, which is a great deal.
Who has the ball?
All I'm looking for is some help.
Who has the ball?
Okay, your friend. I am the one. You know who you are. You bastards. You are the ones.
Oh,
the Titanic is sinking, and you're the one on the entire back of the bed. And I'm holding on, and you're Rose up on the bed going, I'm perfectly safe up here. There's probably some room up here for you, too, but I'm going to let you just slip away into the dark.
I see myself on a private jet flying above.
Okay, so the defense is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and we just keep running the ball the same place.
Up the middle. You're saying we're running the ball up the middle over and over again, and they expect it, and they're there to defend it.
Right.
We're not gaining any yardage.
Right. We're not gaining any yard, and what we'll do is maybe we gain 2 yards, and we feel like, okay, that feels pretty good. And then we lose the ball, and then they're just pushing back on us, and they gain 2 yards, and nothing is happening except we are shut up. Except we are, don't look that way.
I'm trying
help
to understand.
Me. You just said, help me. Okay, so what's happening is we're just bogged down here and just running into each other.
At the line of scrimmage.
And trying to hurt each other. Okay, that's it. So I believe it was Bill Walsh, that it might have been Joel Walsh, who said life is good.
No.
Life's been good.
Life's
he
been
did
good.
Say that, yes.
Thank you.
It's not.
But
it was Bill.
Okay, so, I know, but Joe is his brother.
Joe Walsh said life's been good, though.
And he was like,
and
life's been good, and right now for the 49ers, life sucks, right?
Just keep going, please.
So I read this quote from him, and it was laughable to me because I thought, well, isn't that kind of the point? Isn't that the point of football? I mean, how did you miss that? And you know how you're really too close to a problem sometimes? And because we're all in groupthink, everybody's just doing the same thing. So Bill, not Joel, Bill said something along the lines of, what we need to do is put the ball where the other team isn't. That seems pretty simple. That doesn't seem like a strategy. That seems like the entrance exam. You know, okay, so give me a basic. Well, I think we should put the ball where the other team isn't. Okay, you can come on in now and answer some other questions. That was what changed the San Francisco 49ers. Put the ball where the other team isn't. So there's two things that I've learned from just this really bad football analogy. One, put the ball where the other team isn't. Well, the other team is running this heated, angry, shouting facts and counterfacts at each other. And we're not making any progress on that. So let's move a different way. But then, more importantly, let's look at the football field itself and where everybody is? And what does it mean to speak differently? I'll tell you that. A little bit more of the football legend Glenn Beck. Next.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Okay. So the question is, when you look at somebody like Johnny Depp, you say, how can we... Glenn, you want to talk to people like Johnny Depp? No, I don't. I don't want to talk to people like Johnny Depp. Because anybody who's calling for the assassination of the president is so far past reason that we're never going to get to them. How are you going to talk to the people who are shouting down and throwing Molotov cocktails? You're not. You're never going to talk to them.
Yeah, there's 10% on both sides that...
that you're just not going to talk
to. Unreachable.
Yeah, unreachable. That, quite honestly, want revolution or, you know, burn the whole thing down. Well, that's not where I am. And I don't ever want to go there. I'm smart enough to know that revolution never works out for the people who start the revolution. Only the American Revolution in world history ended with the same guys who started it. So it doesn't, it's not good. And if you think that you're in pain now, wait until there is chaos in the streets and the burning down of buildings and we assassinate 30 people on a baseball diamond. It's not going to work out well. So what happens is we're all clashing. And we want to feel good. And when we punch the other people in the face, we actually put ourselves into that, if you're looking at a football field, that 10-yard line that all the revolutionaries are in, and all the people who are really angry and everything else, there's 10% of those people that are beyond reason with their anger. 10% on the right, 10% on the left. Assuming that that number is right, that means that there is 80 yards, there's 80% of the country that doesn't want to feel that way. Now, are we going to convince the 80% that this is where... you know, this is the right way to go? No. But can we find common ground? And I'm not saying to pass policies. I'm saying to lower the temperature. Can we find and convince, let's just say, 50% of the country that saying assassination of the president is not a good thing, and we shouldn't feel that, and we should stand together. And being these people that say we're at civil war, and there's nothing we can do about it. It's time to punch back. It's time to have violence. It's over if we believe that. So I believe we should play for the rest of the field. When Walsh said, put the ball where the other team isn't. Well, the other teams on television, because they look for views, ratings, clicks, they'll put the most outrageous headline and they'll put the most salacious story up because that's what the red meat is. That's where the real people are that are just like, I want to eat this all day long. And I am just so angry. That's maybe 20% of the population. The rest of the population is not feeling that way. But we're being led by the 10% on each side. So put the ball where the other team isn't. I look at both the 10 yards on the left and the 10 yards on the right with the real radicals. That's the same team, guys. They both want revolution. So I'm going to put the ball in the 80% that doesn't want any of that. And let's talk to those people and forget the others. So I want you to know, when people say to you, if you would pick up this philosophy as we try to teach it over the next few months, if people say to you, how are you going to talk to those people who are just out of their mind crazy? I'm not. I'm not talking about them. I'm not going to talk to them. That's an exercise in frustration. As Paul said, say what you have to say, love them, serve them, be a part of the community. If they're not listening, knock the dust off your feet and move on. We can knock the dust off of our feet of those people. You're not going to talk to the Antifa people. But if you are standing next to them and screaming back, the 80% in the middle lump you in with them because there's no real good guy there. That's why Martin Luther King won. As people were shouting, turning hoses on them, releasing dogs, what did he do? He was praying for those people. He wasn't trying to shout them down because he was right and they were wrong. That's clear. That was Malcolm X's strategy. Take them on. Martin Luther King said, no, don't take them on. Worry about the rest of the country that will see their behavior and then see our behavior and say, I want to be with those guys. Now, when you want to talk to the 80%, and this is the really hard thing. When you want to talk to the 80%, we are currently talking to people that I guess you could kind of put into the behavioral scientist category. And I've been reading and studying and working with people trying to figure out how do we talk to the 80%. And there are people that will say, Glenn, you can't change your language. You're going to stop talking truth. Stop talking truth. No, I know that. I know. And I would never ask anyone to do that. What I'm saying is not that we have different truths, but that we have different languages, the left and the right. And it is proven. And it goes so deep now that when we go to a grocery store, scientists can look at your grocery store record and pretty much tell who you voted for by what products you buy. We are so different. We are as different as somebody who lives in Mexico City and somebody who lives grew up as a Mexican in Mexico City and lives that lifestyle, and somebody who, you know, grew up in Chicago and lives that lifestyle and speaks that language. Yes, we're both people. Yes, we both can recognize truth, but we have so many things that we don't share that if I wanted to be a missionary and I wanted to go down and preach the truth, whatever that truth is, God, the American scripture of the Constitution, whatever it is, I would not say to somebody in Chicago, oh, you want to be a missionary? Okay, well, don't change your language. Well, but I'm going down to Mexico. Yeah, don't speak their language. And whatever you do when you're there, don't eat any of those taco enchilada things. You make sure you're eating ribs the whole time. You get some good Chicago deep dish pizza. And if they're not eating that pizza, don't you talk to them. And you just keep your language. Well, don't you think I should speak Spanish? No, God will work it out. Well, God will work some things out. And sometimes he can translate language after you do all that you can do. We have to look at the language of the left and the right as much as the language of Spanish and English. You can find truth, the exact same truth, in both languages. But you will not be able to explain the truth to somebody who speaks a different language unless you try to speak theirs or they try to speak yours. Otherwise, you're just sitting around yelling at each other. No, I said you should eat deep dish pizza. You know, pizza. I don't know.
That is exactly how I feel sometimes making arguments about politics. Mm-hmm. I just want to... Mm-hmm. Don't you hear what I'm saying?
No, they don't.
Limited government.
They don't.
They just don't even hear it.
Correct. And all we do is start shouting. And then when we're saying, no, pizza, and they're looking at us and they're screaming something at us that may not even be about food, we get angry and we're like, these people are worthless. They won't even understand pizza. Okay, well, we're not speaking the same language. They don't understand it. Now, let me explain the
human
language.
Human life.
Right.
Are you not? Let them live.
Babies.
Alive.
Murder is not a choice.
Okay? And that's exactly what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're doing. And I can show you the difference in language, and you will get nowhere unless you do what Paul said, and that is, when in Rome, be Roman. When he went to Mars Hill and he was trying to convince people that there's only one God, well, you're in Greece, the Parthenon. They had all over the hill by the Parthenon. They had all of these temples for all of the gods. I mean, they really did have like the god of the stomach ache. They had all of these different gods, and they had one temple. That was the temple to the unknown God. So Paul is walking through and he spends time in Greece and he learns their stories. He learns their poets because he's thinking, how can I tell these people that they're crazy for believing in all these gods? Now, he could have gone in and just spoke Hebrew and in Hebrew said, one God, but they wouldn't have understood him. So he spoke their language, literally spoke their language, but then he learned their poetry. He learned all of their stories. He learned what every god was for. And then when he got up onto Mars Hill, which was not the priests, Mars Hill was like the television, you know, Studio City from Athens, Greece. That's what that was. That was a place where people went for entertainment and discussion. It was where people really went and sat all day and they just wanted to think and they just wanted to hear new ideas. Okay? And these new ideas, sometimes they would think that they were crazy, but you could present any idea and these were the real scholars and the people who just wanted to be entertained. And so what did he do? Instead of getting up and speaking a foreign language, he spoke their language. Then he spoke to them in their culture. And instead of bashing and saying, you're stupid, there's only one God, he said, you know, you guys, and he means this in a positive, you guys, I think the deal is, you guys are too religious. Meaning, in a good way, you guys are so religious. You have so many gods. You have so many gods. You guys are really, I mean, you're amazing. You're amazing with what you're doing. However, you have one temple. And can I talk to you about that one temple? I'll explain this and how it fits into our conversation here in a second. Also, Bill O'Reilly is coming up in a few minutes. Upside is our sponsor this half hour. Let me just talk to you as a business person. I run my own business. Every single penny counts, especially now. I mean, boy, how are we doing, gang? How are we doing? How's your business going? I know we're not rolling in the cash. I would imagine you're not either. Every single dime makes a difference. And the last thing I want to do is spend it in ways where we can so clearly and easily save money. So let me tell you about Upside.com. Upside.com bundles things. So if you're going, let's say you're going to Chicago, It will ask you, go to the website and you say, I want to go to Chicago on these dates. It'll say, great. What time? You answer. If you leave an hour earlier or an hour later, we can save you X number of hundreds of dollars. Where do you want your hotel? If you move that hotel one block further from your destination, I can save you, if I bundle it with the airline, I can save you $800. You want that? We're saving thousands of dollars now with Upside.com. And the good thing is the employees will book their travel. We as a company get the savings on the travel, but they get an Amazon gift card. You get $300 in an Amazon gift card. That's as good as cash. And they keep that. So now everybody wins. The hotel, the airline, the person booking the travel, and the company. Who loses here? We use this for all of our travel. May I suggest you start to try it at least? You're going to love it. It is really easy. Go to Upside.com. Minimum purchase does apply. See site for details. Guaranteed at least $100 Amazon gift card for your first trip on Upside.com. Do it now. Upside.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BCK. So the question is, what did Paul say when he met with the Greeks? Did he change the truth? Did he go to the mushy middle? Remember, at the time, resurrection was laughable. There's no resurrection. The Greeks thought that was insane. And one God? Please. What he did was he spoke their language, and he didn't say, you know, you guys got 1,000 gods, and have you considered only 10? He wasn't compromising. What he did is he said, you have one God, because he knew them so well. You have a temple that is dedicated to the unknown God. Let me tell you who that unknown God is. Because he's the boss of all these other gods, because these other gods don't really exist. He has all of the power. That's how you change your language. You don't change the truth. You speak their language.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Well, it's Friday, and there's a lot that has happened this week. A lot of things, including Obamacare. What does the new Trump care look like? What does it mean? How's it being handled? And what's coming next? The guy who really knows is Bill O'Reilly. His voice has been lost for a few weeks. Thank goodness he has a couple of ways for you to connect. We're going to talk to him about his new venture coming up in just a second, but also all of the things that have happened this week as we connect with Bill O'Reilly right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com, where he runs his podcast, which he announced, and I don't even think you asked, quite honestly, Bill. I mean, I charge a lot for my appearances, but I understand that I am going to be on BillO'Reilly.com on his podcast, I think on Monday. Is that right, Bill?
Monday we have you slotted in for like 7 hours.
That might be a little inconvenient, but and boring after a while. But
no, Beck, you?
Yeah, I know, I know, never. I know. But thank you for that, Bill. BillO'Reilly.com with his podcast. You can become a member and get his opinion. And Bill, let's before we get into the healthcare bill, which I think everybody really is anxious to hear your opinion of. You're starting your own newscast.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing that for a while. The No Spin News, that's what the podcast is. And explain something to me, because you're more technically savvy than I am.
Yeah.
So they,
we, called did a telephone.
We do a daily No Spin News, which is an encapsulation of what happens that day, and yeah, I bloviate yeah about what I think of it.
Yeah.
It's like the Talking Points memo, but mm-hmm expanded to about mm-hmm a half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they put it out in a podcast form, and it becomes number one on iTunes, the number one podcast on iTunes.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Oh, shut up. Then what this means is Bill O'Reilly is fishing for a compliment.
No, I really, I mean, if you were to tell me or ask me, O'Reilly, right now go to iTunes, I would go, what?
Okay, so
no,
iTunes,
I've heard of iTunes.
iTunes is where if you are doing podcasts and you are not self-contained, but you're really pushing them out through iTunes, which is what most people do. It is where all of the podcasts from all over the world kind of hang out, and the number one place to go find
right
them.
So it's like you were having, and you say, and you go under podcasts, Beck, and then your podcast shows up. Is that how it goes?
Yes, but we don't do podcasts like that's that just, that you're doing. Yes,
that was just an example.
Yes,
that I
yes
didn't want to use my name because
yes
it would sound egotistical.
Oh my gosh,
so I used your
you
name.
You can't avoid sounding egotistical. Cannot avoid.
We were the number one podcast, so that's a yeah good thing. Right?
Shut up, Bill. Okay, so but you are launching a TV show like I've kind of launched a TV show where you're really doing a show. It's not. It's not you yeah and your underpants behind a microphone.
No, no. I mean, we have, we're looking to do about 40 minutes. We may do it, right now we're doing it we just put in a video that looks pretty good, but we're looking maybe to expand it to a studio. We're not sure yet. We'll see what happens. A lot of interest in it. Did I mention the iTunes thing? There's a lot of interest in it.
Okay. All right, so Bill, let's get right to Obamacare, and what happened yesterday?
Well, I mean, the Republicans in the Senate come out with this vision of national health care, and right away, of course, every Democrat doesn't like it. Two things in play here. Number one, it's all about giving free health care to Americans who are poor or sick, and they can't afford their premiums, health care premiums. That's what this is all about, fundamentally. So the Democratic Party wants to give free health care to people who don't have a lot of stuff. And the Republicans say, no, we can't do that. It's going to bankrupt the nation, and it's not fair to the working people who have to support the free health care by their tax money. It's not fair to the $20 trillion deficit, debt. So we'll give you tax credits, which means that you'll get refunds if you work. The problem is a lot of people don't work. We're not going to give you freebies anymore. We're going to cut back on that and through Medicaid. So right now, Medicaid, which is state-run, has unlimited payments to people to give them free health care. Republican bill says no. There are going to be limits on that, and the states are going to decide. So every Democrat says, oh, no, no, we want the free stuff, so we're going to vote against it. That's essentially what's in play here. All of the other details are so confusing and so crazy, your head will blow off. So I'm not an expert in medical, you know, what's good and what's bad. But the essential war is over giving Americans free stuff. That's the essential war.
Right. I got that. But maybe you're only sharing this on your iTunes number one podcast. But the way this is playing out politically, the Republicans have abandoned their post of we don't believe in free stuff, and we don't believe in a government-run program. And they're not cutting. In some places, they're actually adding to, and they're just reducing the amount of spending. It's not even a cut. It's a reduce the amount of future spending, of future increases.
Right.
And so the question is this really even a repeal and replace of Obamacare, or is this just window dressing?
Well, I think that if you look at what the Republicans have come up with, it's certainly a different health care law. So you wouldn't have to buy health care, number one. Okay? So right now you have to where the government fines you. Number two, employers wouldn't have to provide it. Right now they do if you have more than, I think it's 50 or 49 employees, something like that. And if you don't, they fine you. So that's gone. And then the other stuff is basically, you know, pre-existing conditions. That's still there. All right. So if you want insurance and you have a disease, you'll get it. You'll get it. You know, they can debate it all day long. There are four Republican senators who don't like this bill, will vote for it, they say, Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, and Ron Johnson. The Republican Party needs two of those to come over. Yeah, I think they'll get them. They'll make a few tweaks, and because if they don't, then the Democrats will succeed in holding on to Obamacare. That's what it's all about. So if the Republicans don't pass this new bill, Obamacare will remain law.
So do you think that Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Ron Johnson would be unreasonable to withhold their support?
Depends what their value system is. You know, if you're not going to support it, then you're giving the Democratic Party a lot of power.
Bill, so, for example.
You know, I mean, it's like Lincoln said and Reagan said, you got to get a structure in place where you can do things going forward. If you continue to say no to everything, then the Democrats will make a stunning comeback in the congressional elections next year. So they got to take that into account. I don't think Rand Paul is ever going to come over. He's like a gadfly. I think the other three will if they maybe make a few tweaks. So I think that there's a better than 50-50 chance the Senate will pass it.
These are just bad bills. That's why these guys aren't – they're not conservative bills. I mean, how is it possible Republicans can't do better than this?
You just said, you know,
enough votes to pass a strict conservative bill,
right? But you
in
just
the House or in the Senate.
You just said it.
Votes.
But you just said that it depends on what their principles are. If their principles are the Constitution, and they find this unconstitutional, and they find this destructive, how could they? I mean, because you said it depends on what their principles are. You will give, if they don't, you will give the Democrats a lot of power.
Right.
Well, that's not a principle. That's a strategy.
Well, it just depends on how you see it. Because if you're going to allow the Democratic Party to gain or regain power, which they would, in my opinion, then your principles are flying out the window because you're not going to have any chance of enacting them in the first place.
Okay, so we
so
have
Lincoln, I have principles,
right?
But and I'm not going to sell them out. But it's a long game.
Yeah,
and if so I don't have power, I'm not going to get anything done.
So I agree with that long game. However, the Republicans have, you know, the GOP has really run hand in hand and tried to convince the Tea Party that they were going to repeal Obamacare. And then with Mitt Romney, it became repeal and replace. And that was a major shift there. But I think most voters believed that we were going to get rid of Obamacare. And that's what this president promised. There are people that are suffering all over this country because they can't afford their health insurance anymore. This does not help reduce the cost of health care at all. You know, when you're looking at the Republicans and the Democrats, honestly, what's the difference between the two? 5%?
The goal for the Republican Party is to bring down health premiums for the American people because that translates into votes. But they couldn't do it all in one bill because of the filibuster rule. Very complicated. So there's another bill that comes up if this passes that says insurance companies selling health will be able to compete in every state. And the Republican Party says that will drive down premiums. That can't be attached to this bill because if it were, then there would be a level of acceptability that's 60 votes in the Senate. I don't know why it's a Marcaine rule, okay? But if you do it separately, as a separate law, then it's only the majority, okay? So that's why they didn't attach that. So it's a stair step. First, we get this bill passed, all right, which knocks out all the mandates, knocks out all the tax stuff, and puts in place a structure that Obamacare is pretty much done. And then we pass the bill about insurance companies competing, which drives down premiums. You see?
I just don't believe that you actually believe a second of that.
I'm just telling you what the strategy is.
I understand the strategy, but I don't believe that anyone in this country actually believes that that is a real strategy behind closed doors.
You don't believe that if this passes, that the next step would be to introduce a health insurance competition law? You don't believe that will happen?
Nope, I don't.
Why not? Why wouldn't it?
Who's talking about it besides those four?
Besides the holdouts.
Yeah, besides the holdouts.
Those are the only ones talking about it.
Who's talking about that? There's no desire for that.
Trump made a big deal out of that. Trump made a big deal out of that in his campaign. That was like one of his major issues, that there should be competition.
He's not making a big deal out of it now.
Yeah. He has the bully pulpit.
And also, he made a big deal about repealing health care and having government pay for everyone. Well, that was another big thing he made.
Okay, so hang on. I got to take a quick break. Back with more with Bill O'Reilly. You can get his podcast at BillO'Reilly.com. BillO'Reilly.com. I hear it's, someplace on iTunes.
It's like number 300 now.
It's like number 300, and maybe a little push from this show, it'll be number one.
Yeah, maybe. I guess we would help it a lot.
Yeah, so anyway, Bill O'Reilly, BillO'Reilly.com. Make sure you join him and buy one of his books. When we come back, we'll get some more on this. Also, want to talk a little bit about Georgia and the 6th District in Georgia. Also, what he talks about in his podcast about a cultural civil war. We'll get more into that in a second. First, this. Have you seen the viral video that with neighbors in New Mexico going and grabbing somebody out of the house, a burglar out of the house, and making sure that they hold him until police come? I remember this from my childhood. This is what my grandfather and my uncle did. There was a guy that was robbing a house, somebody at the edge of the street. They lived on a dead-end street, so nobody ever came down. And there was a woman, a busybody old lady that lived at the end of the street, who if you came down the street at night, she checked that car. Who was it? It was like a real neighborhood watch before neighborhood watch. And she called and said, there's a car, and it's just pulled in down the street. And I don't recognize that car. I think there's something wrong going on. My uncle and my grandfather got out and they went down to the house and it was a burglar. And they took their rifles with them and they held him until police came. That's the way it used to work. Now there's a viral video that's going around in New Mexico because that's exactly what happened. It doesn't happen anymore. You can not worry about who's driving on the street, praying that there's a woman at the end of the street that's recognizing all the cars. Or you can have somebody alert you immediately with a very inexpensive and high-tech revolutionary burglar system called SimpliSafe. Go to simplisafebeck.com. You can install it yourself in under an hour. There's no wires or anything else. You pull it out of the box, plug in the base station, and it tells you exactly what to do. I've installed it. It's simple. And the monitoring is $14.99 a month. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Get a special 10% discount right now. SimpliSafeBeck.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I cannot wait to hear the opinion of world-renowned author, television host, journalist, singer, dancer, songwriter, Bill O'Reilly, Little Billy O'Reilly, as we used to call him back in the 60s when he was singing with Stevie Wonder. I can't wait to hear his opinion on this.
We're already spending a lot of money on design, but I'll give you an idea that nobody has heard about yet. And I'm not sure, but I'm a builder. That's what I love to do. That's probably what I do best. I'm a builder. And we're thinking of something that's unique. We're talking about the southern border. Lots of sun, lots of heat. We're thinking about building the wall as a solar wall so it creates energy and pays for itself. And this way, Mexico will have to pay much less money. And that's good, right? Is that good?
Little Billy O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. What do you think of the solar wall that would pay for
itself?
Oh, man,
that would be something. It would be so hot, nobody could climb over it.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
about 120 degrees in Arizona right now, so plenty of solar down there.
Well, it doesn't. I don't know if you know this, but temperature has nothing to do with the solar. It's collecting the rays.
See, that's what I was going to say. I have no idea what this does.
Yeah.
But I know there's a lot of sun down there in that basin. So,
what was Donald Trump doing with a solar wall, a brand new idea, right. and then trying to convince his people? And they laughed when he says, that's good. I think they thought he was joking that, you know, that'll cost Mexico less, and that's good, right? First of all, the math would never work out that way. But what was he doing, do you suppose?
I think he was trying to confuse everybody. That's what Trump does. So he throws this out and then everybody goes, well, what does that mean? And, I think it's probably a, diversionary tactic, Beck. I think that's might be what that was, but they might.
So wait, because you've talked about
there.
This.
You never know. It might say
you've talked about this before as, as a strategy, and you have said it's not the strategy that you would use. What, how does that help us in a world of chaos? To have a president have that strategy. Help me out with the strategy. What does that strategy get him and us?
It doesn't get him anything other than he's tweaking his opposition, which, like, Donald Trump loves to do that. He votes far too much time in doing that. He loves to tweak them. But he's going to build some part of the wall, and then he's going to slap a little tax on Mexico. Maybe their trucks coming in here have to pay a little bit more. And then you're going to go, that money is going to go to build whatever we're going to build. That's how this is going to shake down. So you put a few solar panels on there, I don't know. But that's the big picture. That's what will happen. Beck, are you still there?
I am. I don't know who is. So who, how does he think that, who is he tweaking specifically? Do you have any idea with the solar panel that doesn't make
Greens him? And it, because you remember there was criticism from the progressive crew that the wall would be an environmental disaster because some salamanders wouldn't be able to cross.
Right.
They'd separate some toad families.
Right.
There'd be the Mexicans and then the Texan toads.
All right. So he's going after those people
it's
who are
all about tweaking.
Okay.
Tweaking.
All right. Back in just a second, we're going to figure out why Bill O'Reilly has sold 4 million books. Also, Georgia 6th District, next.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
On BillO'Reilly.com this week, Bill has talked about a lot of things. One of them was the Georgia 6th District. The Democrats pin their hopes on winning that district, taking that congressional seat from the Republicans. It obviously didn't work out that way. Does this mean anything at all to you, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, big California money came into the Georgia district. Folks down there saw that. And said, you know, we're not going to have Nancy Pelosi trying to buy the election down here.
Right.
So the Republican congressional candidate won by about 3.5%. And that was a bigger margin than Donald Trump won that district. It's a suburb of Atlanta.
Yeah.
So,
Do you think that if the money wouldn't have come, if the Democrats hadn't have played it the way they did, that they would have actually had a chance? Was this?
Yes, I do. I think that in the big urban areas, there's much more sympathy for a Democratic platform than there is in the rural areas of this country. If you look at the map, Donald Trump won overwhelming counties. And I don't think the Trump people have bailed on him, by the way. I don't think they bailed because they understand how viciously he's being attacked and how unfair it is. And I'll just give you one example. I mean, the Coates testimony, and this is a pretty good story. Coates goes in and testifies in a closed setting in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, I'm sorry, the House Intelligence Committee. And then an hour later, somebody leaks it to NBC News what Coates allegedly said. I mean, that's a violation of every ethic in the House of Representatives. That means that other people are not going to voluntarily testify because they know that the liberal press is going to get a leak, particularly if it's bad against President Trump. And the other thing is, who knows if that's true or not? You know, people assume that leaks are true. Most of the time, they're not true. That the person leaking may have been there in the interview, may have seen Coates testify. But if they don't have any ethics and they're going to leak it, they certainly could lie about what Coates said or spin it.
Right.
So you know.
So I want to get back to that. But I want to get back to.
So I don't think Trump people are bailing. Right.
I don't think so either. But I want to go back to the lesson that you think the Democrats might have learned. They were talking earlier about right after I read stories about, well, we should distance ourselves from Nancy Pelosi. I think she has become the Newt Gingrich, if you will, of the Democratic side that may have played a role in a positive way at some point, but is now so overplayed their hand that they can be used as damaged goods really easily by the other side. You know, like or don't like Nancy Pelosi or Newt Gingrich, that's just a fact. They can be used by the other side.
Pelosi's a caricature now.
So have they overplayed their hand? Is it just Nancy Pelosi? Or is there something, is there a shift in the country at all of the overplaying of the hand? Are they tired of just these characters? And if so, where do you think the Democrats are going to go next?
Wow, what a question. First of all, has the progressive far left overplayed its hand? Absolutely.
Yes.
Have they made Donald Trump into a sympathetic figure, which I didn't think was possible? I mean, I never thought it was possible that people would feel sorry for him. But they are. And they should be, because he's not getting a fair shake, not even close. So, sure, the progressive far left wing of the Democratic Party is wrecked.
So where does
the party of John Kennedy wrecked it?
Where does that party go? Do they fully embrace the socialist
direction? Well, they're going to have to get their butt kicked one more time, okay? Because all the candidates running against Trump in the next election, if Trump, you know, decides to run, are going to be far left people. Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, is going to portray himself as a moderate, but he's really not. Elizabeth Warren, she'll run. Biden, if he can get out of bed, will probably give it a try.
I mean, you want to talk about a collection. You want to talk about a. This is a collection of real losers. I mean, this is Con Air.
I don't know if that's fair. I mean, Cuomo's run New York State
For the nation. Do you think the nation running to?
Andrew? I was just going to say he's run it efficiently in a sense that. He's not Mayor de Blasio of New York City, is just
right.
Unbelievable. I mean, but Cuomo's value system is so opposed to free enterprise and
right.
so opposed
right.
to what the, I think, mainstream American workers' value system is that, yeah, they're going to have to get thumped one more time before the party comes back to moderation.
So you talked about an American cultural civil war that is going on. What does the future of our country look like, in your opinion?
It's too murky. You know, they had a little ball when I was a kid. You buy it, and then it goes...
Yeah, magic eight ball.
You shake the ball, and it goes, check with me later.
Right.
You know, it's just too murky because you don't know. The changes are unbelievable, particularly in the media. The mainstream media, the national media, is collapsing. Scott Pelley, the big-time anchor of the CBS Evening News, leaves his position. Nobody even knows it. Nobody even knows it. Think about Cronkite and Rather and all of that
yeah.
happened. Pelley walks out after 6 years, and nobody knows it. Can you name cable television? It's I put it on, and I watch it now that I'm not in it anymore.
Wait, Scott Pelley left?
I got to watch the Andy Griffith Show. Yeah. I mean, Aunt B gives me a better opinion than what I'm getting on the cable news.
No, I know. And it's and honestly, Bill, that's, you know, when we were working together at Fox, that's one of the things you and I talked about. And a lot of people said it's going to there's years and years and decades left. No, I don't think they're certainly not the way it was when you and I were together at Fox. It is totally changed. And most people, you know, everybody here, this is funny because everybody here, except for me, they didn't know that Scott Pelley left. And I will go a step further.
Breaking news.
I will go a step further. I believe there is a large majority of this audience
who doesn't even know who Scott Pelley is. Yeah.
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 I mean, that's true. If you go out on the street and say, who are the evening news anchors? And they look at you like, what? So everything is changing.
Do they have any idea, Bill?
Yeah. About what?
About the news heads, the people at CNN, the new people at Fox.
They have no idea. They wouldn't be failing. I mean, CNN, their philosophy is bash Trump every day. Okay?
Well, no, but wait, hang on just a second. There is a difference between failing. You can know you're failing and not know how to fix it. You're saying they don't even know they're failing.
No, they know they're failing because they see the numbers that come in every day. It's like a baseball team losing. It's like the Mets right now. But they don't know how to fix it, and they still make money, CNN, because CNN International and all of that. So they're still making money. But if you look at what's happening, that the information flow to the folks, to the working people who aren't locked in on this, they got to make a living. They got to raise their kids. The information flow is almost nothing. You don't get any facts. All you get is a bunch of crap from people who are not even qualified to give an opinion. You know. They don't know anything.
I know.
They throw them on there, and so-and-so is saying this, and you look at them, and you go, I could destroy these people in 30 seconds. Okay? I mean, it's just ridiculous what's happening. So that has a big influence on the way people perceive the culture. But the good news is that they know that the Democratic Party and the mainstream national media has an alliance, an actual alliance, all right, to regain power. They're working together, and the folks know it. Therefore, Trump gets cut an amazing amount of slack, where maybe he shouldn't. But he gets cut the slack because the people go, the fix is in.
Yeah.
And that's why guys like you and me, when we put up our forums, all right, I mean, we're giving you honest analysis. I am, and I think you are, all right? And my analysis is fact-based, which is why everybody loves me on iTunes.
All right. We got it. You're shameful.
Whatever that is.
Shameful and shameless, really.
Come on, you gotta.
So, are you going back?
People don't know where to find me, and I have to tell them.
I know. Are you going back to television?
I don't know yet. It has to be the right vehicle. It has to be a vehicle that's competitive, and because I'm having fun, just not. I never wake up and go, gee, I wish I could commute to New York City today for an hour and a half. And then walk into, a tension-packed cauldron. I wish I could do that. So this is a lot of fun, what I'm doing. But I have some battles I want to fight. I have some battles. And if the right forum presents itself, I would absolutely consider it.
All right, Bill O'Reilly. You can find him online at BillO'Reilly.com. You can hear his podcast, which sometimes, occasionally, I know Monday he's got an absolute superstar with him on Monday.
And that would be Glenn Beck, everyone.
Yeah, so I'm going to be on his podcast. As he used to say to me, that thing you do on the internet or whatever that is, I'm going to be on that thing that he does on the internet on BillO'Reilly.com on Monday. Join his growing number of listeners and viewers. And Bill, thank you so much for being with us.
All right, Beck, we'll talk to you on Monday, and I really appreciate you having me on the program.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bill O'Reilly.
Notice he did use that. There was a little. I remember that back in the day when the Blaze first started. It was a lot of what are you doing there on the internet?
Yeah,
is
you're
it?
Doing something on the internet.
Yeah, there's a lot of
what
that.
Kills me is he one of the first times, and it's funny because he just said, you know, they don't even know I could destroy them, you know, meaning facts. And I remember the first thing I ever said to him, I sat down at his desk and he's 6'5". And the desk that he sits at is a little teeny desk. You are right on top of him. He said one thing, and I said two things before we went on the air the first time. He walks in. He did not even look at me. And he's looking at the camera, and he's going over his talking points. And he's looking at the camera. And then without even looking at me, he says, "You're in my shot." And I'm like, oh, and I lean back because I was leaning on the table. It's such a small table. And I was leaning on the table and I'm like, oh, sorry. And I lean back. And so that was the first thing I said to him. And then they're counting him down, 10, 9, 8, we're going live. And I reached over and I grabbed his hand and I said, "Please don't kill me." And he didn't respond at all. But he's the kind of guy I knew. He knew his facts. I've never said that to any other journalist ever because they don't necessarily know their facts. You talk to them about things and that you can tell it's just there's nothing in there. They don't know what the hell they're even talking about. And the other thing that came to mind was he's sold a billion books. I remember he said to me at one point, "Beck, why are you writing all these books?" And I said, "Because, Bill, I've got a lot of information, and you don't understand the power of the book. And conservatives read a lot. You write too many books. Look at him; he's a machine now."
Right.
And the last is how we sat there at the very end, and I said, "Go into internet, Beck. What are you doing? You'd be here forever. What are you doing?" And I'm like, "No, I'm telling you, Bill, I think this thing is going to come down. It's going to come fast." And he was one who actually bought into that. Most people were like, "Oh, it's got years and decades and blah, blah, blah." No, he understood the power of the internet more than most people did at the time. And now it's really interesting to see how powerful he can be just online.
And unfortunately, we're out of time for the 158 times he was right on stuff. We don't have time to cover any of those.
Ah, shit. All right. Now this. Your company's success comes down to a few key factors. And one of them, the biggest factor probably, is the people, the team that you build. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job opening to 100-plus job sites with a single click. Over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in 24 hours. Now, other sites depend on the candidates finding you. They're going out and looking. ZipRecruiter is sorting and looking for the candidate that matches your job. ZipRecruiter is different. They have the technology that brings the right person to you. Then you don't have to juggle the emails, calls to your office. You just screen them, you rate them, you manage the candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses in all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And you can try it now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck Program.
888-727-BECK.
Mercury.
888-727-BECK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, America. So glad you're here. It's Friday. We have Adam Carolla joining us here in just a second. He's doing something pretty cool, pretty amazing with Dennis Prager. And so we're going to talk to Adam Carolla about his project. He's making a film and just his point of view. I'd love to hear now. We just heard Bill O'Reilly. Now let's hear from Adam Carolla what he thinks on some of these things and what's really happening in Washington, D.C. and where he thinks the country is headed. Very fascinating. I'm a big fan of Adam Carolla.
He's pretty much a free speech absolutist, which yes. I love.
Me too. Yes.
And I would like to. I wouldn't mind hearing his opinion on some of the recent controversies, because there's been some on the left and some on the right with people saying offensive things. Bill Maher said an offensive word on his show. Shakespeare in the Park doing that.
I'd love to hear that. I'd love to hear what he has to say about Johnny Depp's comment earlier this week that just broke today. About somebody, you know, an actor, it's time for an actor to assassinate the president. That's pretty remarkable stuff. And especially for a free speech absolutist. Adam Carolla joins us next.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Adam Carolla is going to be joining us this hour. Anxious to hear from a guy who is really a free speech absolutist. I really admire Adam Carolla and for his foresight on where things were going. I mean, wasn't Adam one of the first real podcasts? In America, I mean,
he was one of the big successes, the only first success.
Yeah, probably the first real big success was Adam Carolla, a guy who was doing, you know, the Man Show, which is, I mean, you know, people forget it was Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel together. And look at where Jimmy Kimmel is today. Adam is now starting to go into colleges. And he's making a new film trying to teach correct principles. And we have him on the phone with us to talk about that. But I really want to hear from him on Johnny Depp and what Johnny Depp said this week, calling for an actor to step up and assassinate the president of the United States. Adam Carolla from NoSafeSpaces.com right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Comedian, radio personality, television host, actor, podcaster, author, director. Do you ever sleep? Adam Carolla, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
You bet. Hey, I want to start with some. We're going to get to No Safe Spaces and a movie that you're trying to put together with Dennis Prager. And some of the things I think are really brilliant stuff that you're doing. But you are a guy who, you know, obviously no safe spaces. We have to have a conversation with each other. We have to not be afraid to say the unthinkable. And the only speech that needs protection is the protection that nobody is the speech that nobody likes. Is there a line in this for you? And let me take you to what's his face? That just said this in
Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Johnny Depp. Let me take you to Johnny Depp. If you didn't hear it, listen to it. We're going to play it.
Can we bring Trump here?
He says, can we bring Trump here? He's in London. Can we bring Trump here?
No, you've misunderstood.
He says, no, you misunderstand.
I think he needs help.
I think he needs help.
I'm just going to be in the press. It'll be horrible.
It's going to be in the press. It'll be horrible.
I think you're all a part of it. When was the last time an actor assassinated a president?
When was the last time an actor assassinated the president? Then he says, I'm not an actor. I'm a professional liar. But then he closes this out with, but maybe it's time that was repeated or something like that. Adam, where do you go with that?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts. First off, you have to understand what it's like to live out here in Hollywood. It's like remember when you were, you know, 12 or 13 years old and you got together, and maybe girls are a little more guilty of this than boys, but I could remember doing it when I was 12 or 13 years old. You get together and there was that one kid you didn't like and he wasn't at the party. And it was really just a competition to talk more smack about that person that wasn't there at the pool party.
Yes.
You know, who can say worse things about bad Ronald at the pool party? And you start getting drunk with this and it almost becomes a competition and there's no gravity. There's no pushback. It's not like there's a 13-year-old Dennis Prager wearing an old-time one-piece bathing suit with stripes on it.
No, I imagine he's the one that
kind with stripes on it.
He's the one that you're making fun of at the pool party.
Right. Yeah, bad Dennis. He doesn't come up and tap you on the shoulder. So it becomes this sort of crazy, insular competition with no gravity and no pushback. And then sometimes you take it on the road and someone puts a microphone in front of you, and you don't realize that you're not in the friendly confines of your backyard swimming pool talking crap about bad Ronald. And now, so to these guys, to Johnny Depp and so many people who live in Hollywood, this is just conversation you'd have on a Tuesday. So that's number one. But number two, if you really want my honest opinion about this kind of stuff, Johnny Depp, Kathy Griffin, what have you, it's outrageous, and I understand, but I am not outraged. For me, because these are comedians and actors being stupid, and that's what we do. I don't want to be a hypocrite. It's outrageous, but I'm not outraged. Here's what outrages me. What outrages me is the politicians and the civil rights leaders and the whomever who talk about, you know, if you're black, you have a target on your back. If you're gay, you have a target on your back. This guy's gunning for you. He hates women. He hates gays. He hates Jews. And if you're in this group, you better run serpentine to the mailbox. Well, that kind of talk will get somebody shot, because if you hear enough of that talk, you think you compare this guy to Hitler enough. Well, who amongst us wouldn't be a hero for taking out Hitler before he rose to his ultimate power?
So is there a limit? I agree with you. It's a really hard line, because I agree with your analogy that these guys, this is the way they talk. And they don't like it when somebody else says the same kind of junk with the same meaningless, mindless rhetoric about their guy, which is outrageous and wrong. But they become so outraged when somebody else says it, and then they say it so flippantly, and they do say it publicly because there is no pushback. I don't want to be the pushback police, but as a society, when society stops pushing back, and I'm not talking special interest groups, I'm not talking about the law, I'm not talking about anything else other than people going, ick, Johnny, what the hell is wrong with you? When there isn't that societal pushback, can't you just spiral out of control? And shouldn't there be some societal pushback?
I think there should. There probably is. In a way, I kind of like it, because they are, with each proclamation and allegation, losing credibility.
Yes.
I've always used this analogy. I've said, there's never been a better time in America to be an actual racist, because everybody's a racist now. You're getting lumped in with Adam Carolla and Glenn Beck.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, what does it even mean anymore?
Right.
I mean, could you remember what the word racist meant? Could you remember, you know, circa 1997, if you opened the newspaper and it said, this racist comment by this sportscaster, your mind went completely to the darkest, deepest part of, oh, what did he shout into the microphone? What?
Right.
If you saw it now, if you opened the newspaper and you heard a comedian made a racist remark, or a whomever, especially somebody on the right, would you even bother reading the article? Would you bat an eye? Okay, so they've taken one of the most powerful words and completely dumped a sack of flour in it and diminished it completely. I'm sorry, I had to pick the whitest powder.
It could have been wheat flour.
Could have been wheat flour.
Right, could have been blue tortilla flour. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, they took a word that used to mean something and took all the teeth out of it, right? Or most of them. Mm-hmm. Essentially defanged it. And they're doing that with almost everything now. So we used to have to listen when actors spoke. Do we have to listen anymore? I don't mean we had to listen, but, you know, this person has sidled up to the microphone. He's going to endorse a candidate. This is going to be a big deal. You want to get his endorsement. Do you even care anymore? Do we need anybody's endorsement?
No. It's nice to have the freedom to ignore, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is a good thing.
So when
maybe Hollywood is just sinking in the ocean.
Right. I think, of course, I think it is a good thing. And that's why I've always been a big free speech guy, because I want to know. Don't cry racist. Don't shut him up. I want to know what people actually believe. Then I can decide myself. I want to. That guy down the street. He's an actual Nazi. Kids don't play with his kids. You know what I mean? I want to know who they are. People start to shut up, and then it starts to fester in them, and then it gets really bad. Let me take you here, though, moving from racism to a broader topic. No words have meaning anymore. Truth has no meaning anymore. Lies have no meaning. Anybody can say anything about anybody, and it doesn't matter. Joanna Gaines, by the way, is leaving her TV show to go into a facial cream. Now, that's an actual sponsored, paid-for ad that is being run on several websites, including mine up until this last week. And when we went to him and said, you can't run that ad. It's completely false. You want our money or not? Well, no, but there's no consequence anymore for lies.
Well, we replaced, it's a very interesting thing. We replaced, I think, with I feel. How many times have you had this conversation with somebody where, I see it all the time where I say to people, look, this guy on the airplane, the airlines made a mistake. They overbooked it or they did whatever. But somewhere around the 25th time the security guard tells you to please stand up and exit the plane, you have to comply. I don't know what the other options are. If you're not going to do it, they have to physically remove you. And the answer, when you say to somebody, what would you do if you were there and you'd ask 25 times for someone to be removed from an airplane and they refused? You have to physically lift them up and drag them, remove them from the plane. And the answer that I would get from everyone is, I just feel like there's a better way to handle this. And the word is feel. And my point is I'm wide open to better ways to handle this, but I need you to tell me now how that should be handled.
Yes.
You telling me, I feel like, look, I feel like we shouldn't have dropped a bomb in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I feel like the Japanese should have never bombed Pearl Harbor. I feel like the plane should have never hit the Twin Towers. That's what I feel. But I need you to tell me how to stop it.
Adam Carolla is joining us. He is looking for some crowdfunding, and he's really close to his goal. He and Dennis Prager are putting a film together, No Safe Spaces, and they're actually traveling to some of the most dangerous places in the world for ideas, and that is not over in Islamic countries necessarily. That is in our own country on the campuses of universities. And we'll get his view on this and tell you, he'll have tell us about the project and try to get you involved in it. I think it's a really worthy thing. We'll take a quick break and come back with Adam Carolla, nosafespaces.com. Sponsor of this half hour is Goldline. There's a lot of people thinking that this is going to go on forever with the stock market and the debt, but no country has ever done what we are doing, and now what all countries are doing, and that is devaluing money and just printing or digitizing money. It's never worked ever before, ever. This will be a brand new thing if it works. And in our guts, we all know it's not going to work. In our guts, we all know the stock market doesn't just keep going up. It also goes down. As we're looking now at our pensions and people who have pensions, people here in Dallas, they're having problems with the pensions. They are underfunded. Illinois is now 100% of their tax collection has to go for the court-ordered, mandated full pension. 100%. How are you going to pay for schools? How are you going to pay for roads? Well, I feel, as he just said, I feel that they should get their pension. Well, but yes, but how does that work? What is going to happen? We're going to go through some turmoil. May I suggest you read Goldline's information, their risk information, find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. You know, have 10% in a hard, tangible asset that you have in your hand is probably a really good idea in a world that is so upside down. Call 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. For as little as $2,500, you can get 3 months of price protection, which means if the price of gold goes down and your $2,500 is only worth $2,300 in 3 months, they're going to make that up and make sure you're good at $2,500. Nobody else does that. And up to $25,000, or beginning at $25,000, they'll make you whole for a whole year. No stock is offering you that. In a world that is this chaotic, call Goldline now. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
We have one. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
When we come back at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to give you an amazing quote from Elizabeth Warren, where she is saying that this is blood money. This health care bill is blood money and is going to get people killed. It's just insane rhetoric. And what Adam Carolla and Dennis Prager are trying to do is they're trying to go in and help people think and learn to think in college campuses. And they want to make a movie, crowdfunding at Indiegogo. They're doing a month trying to raise $1 million, 30 days to raise $1 million. They're very, very close to their current goal. Adam, tell me about the project.
Well, first off, I love Dennis Prager because he has so much wisdom.
Yeah.
And I wish more people would approach life this way, which is, you can't get further apart than me and Dennis Prager as human beings. He's a very religious Jew. I'm an atheist from the San Fernando Valley. He grew up on the East Coast. He went to great schools. He traveled. I never left North Hollywood. I never went to college. I never learned a second language. I never had a religion. I got dumped off on a construction site and picked up garbage for a living. But I was always a fan of his because I thought the guy had wisdom. And I used to listen to Religion on the Line, his old radio show, as an atheist construction worker, because I just wanted to know. Not because I wanted to convert, just because I wanted to gain some knowledge. I wish more people could approach life this way. And by the way, he's a deeply religious person. I've told him 2,000 times I'm an atheist. And he does not care at all. It does not hinder our relationship or the way he feels about me at all, which is a lesson in these times I would love to get across
yes.
to the world.
Yes.
I had the privilege of doing some speaking engagements with him. We fell in love with each other, again, not because of the things we had in common, but because of the things we sought after, which is just knowledge, wisdom, understanding. Mm-hmm. And he came to me with this project, and I said, "Oh my God, I've been thinking. I got two 11-year-old twins. We're talking. You know, for the day they were born, we set up a college fund for them. That was 11 years ago. I'm seriously considering not letting them go to college.
I'm doing the same thing." I'm doing the same thing. I mean, I have a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old, and I'm like, I don't think I want to send them to college. I mean, it's going to cripple them.
Right. So, and not only that, but look, if college were free, I wouldn't want them to go.
Yes.
Not to mention the, you know, 50 grand a year, whatever yeah. the hell it is these days. So, Dennis came to me and he said, "We got to do this project." I said, "Dennis, anywhere you go, I'll follow." And we're going to go to colleges. We're going to speak at colleges, and we're going to. But it's not going to be a straight documentary. There's going to be reenactments. There's going to be young Dennis. There's going to be young Adam. We're going to have fun with it. It's going to be a film, and there's going to be a lot of comedy in it. And if your listeners go to nosafespaces.com, they can go look we already hit Cal State Northridge. So we've been to one college. There's a whole bunch of little 2-minute vignettes of us up on stage, and you can get a good idea for our dynamic. And I bring the humor. Dennis brings the thought-provoking conversation.
Will you put Dennis Prager on a trampoline, scantily clad?
I'll get him back into that one-piece striped swimsuit he wore in the 40s, and yeah. We'll get him on that trampoline.
That was good. That was good. All right, so just go to nosafespaces.com. When do you think you'd have this done?
We're looking for, I think, mid early 2018. We shot out one college already, and once we secure the funding, we'll get started in earnest and hit it.
And what are you looking to show in the movie quickly?
I want to see what's going on. I've never been on a college campus before. I just see what I see on the news, and it seems kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
I think what we're going to try to explain is that hard work, values, no safe spaces, a little adversity, a little gravity is a good thing when you're growing.
NoSafeSpaces.com. Join the fight right now. NoSafeSpaces.com.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So some crazy things have happened in speech. We were just talking to Adam Carolla about safe zones and free speech zones. And how are we going to deal with this? And these two things can make you very, very angry. And can also give you righteous indignation, a righteous cause to fight against. And don't, because we're never going to make an impact on Johnny Depp. You're never going to make an impact on him. You're never going to make an impact on the words of Elizabeth Warren. You're not. Listen to what Elizabeth Warren just said about the Republican bill, which is at best a reduction of the increases of Obamacare.
Yeah, to give you a quick piece on that, the Obamacare says you get free money to pay for your health care if up to $98,000 of income.
So okay? If you have $98,000 of income, you get free Obamacare, everything under $98,000.
Right. For the GOP plan, until 2020, it just stays at $98,000.
Right.
Okay. After 2020, it drops to $86,000 in income.
So,
so
now,
you still get free money if you earn $86,000, but not $98,000. Okay. That's like one of the main differences.
Poverty line?
It's 400% over the poverty line.
Right. What I'm asking is, you know, you're doing this at the poverty line. Okay. Well, let's talk about what kind of humans we are.
Yeah.
This is 400% over the poverty line. So we should fix healthcare by making it more free to drive the cost of healthcare for regular people who are working and are not living near the poverty line, drive those costs down. Everything they're doing, as we see now, are driving those costs through the roof. So what does he do? They don't fix it. And they say, oh, we're going to decrease the increase. Mm-hmm. After 2020.
And mm-hmm. far enough into the future that there's an incredible amount of doubt whether they'd actually do it.
Yeah,
because they're just pushing this all out past the future elections and everything else.
So here's what Elizabeth Warren just said.
I've read the Republican health care bill. This is blood money. They're paying for tax cuts with American lives.
Mm. Okay.
Ridiculous.
All right. So let me just explain. We're not living in the world that we used to understand. We're not living in the America that used to make sense. We're just not. But don't think that just they have changed. As I said earlier today, look at a football field, and the first 10 yards on one end zone, you put all of the radical revolutionaries from the left, all of the people that are radical revolutionaries, and all of the people that want to whip you up into a frenzy on the left, that want to gain ratings or political power by saying these outrageous things so they can get ratings and clicks and all the Americans that are wanting revolution behind them. The next 10 yards, so right up to the 20-yard line, are those people who are on the right doing exactly the same thing. And those guys are just battling it out with a knife fight. And they're calling each other names. They're going to explode at some point. They're going to actually openly fight. Why are we letting those 20, or let's be crazy, 30 yards dictate to what everybody else wants to do in the other 70 yards or 80 yards? The closer you get to the other end zone is where the real people are. Now, there are going to be people right at the 25-yard who don't want to be a part of that, and they're not part of it, but they're being sucked into it. Those the left and the right, the hardcore, burn it down. There's nothing worth. We've got to start from the beginning. Let's have a revolution right now. Let's kill the other side because they're meaningless. You know, it's about time we have some assassinations. Most Americans want nothing to do with that. But most Americans have no place to go because they don't see a home for them. They don't see a place to where a large group of people are gathered going, okay, well, A, none of that is true. That's not really what's going on. Here's what the facts are. Nobody believes in the facts. This is another bad thing that is happening. Both presidents, both Donald Trump, Barack Obama was no better on the press. Listen to Hillary Clinton talk about Al Jazeera. You know, a lot of people are going to get their news. This is a quote from Al Jazeera, because at least at Al Jazeera, you feel like you're getting real news. That's long before Donald Trump showed up. They were doing the same thing to the press that Donald Trump is doing it. He's just taken it and moved it into a new realm because the people that support Donald Trump have felt misused and abused by the press for so long. They had to manufacture the anger against the press for the left. He's just saying what people feel, that you're not telling us the truth. And what's happening? The truth tellers on the other side are doing the same thing. It's like, and have you ever seen a movie made, let's just use a Christian movie, a movie made for Christians where they speak just the language of the Christians, and they make everybody who's not a Christian look like a Hallmark movie at Christmas time, where the bad guy,
businessman, yeah, the Hallmark movie,
right?
Oh, no.
where all businessmen who want to stay open on Christmas Eve are all about the money and only want to destroy Christmas.
Probably could have used Ebenezer Scrooge as an example here.
Yes, okay.
Rather than the obscure Hallmark movie.
Well, because we all watch them.
Right, no,
we
all watch them. I love them, man.
Right. But they're so ridiculous. That's not the way business people are, mm-hmm. Okay? Some are, but most are not. And they're doing this, the left and the right media are painting exaggerated cartoons of each other because it's what sells. And quite honestly, the people like Elizabeth Warren are making a cartoon out of themselves. We are watching in Washington, D.C., think of the political leadership, and they're almost cartoons. If you want to be a satirist, you don't have to draw them with exaggerated features. They've already drawn that exaggerated feature themselves. And it's because it sells to their audience. But now, let's look at something that will make a difference. Let's look at the movies that have been made or the messages that are made that are not trying to sell to their own crowd. Look, I know right now I could pour on a lot of ratings, but it would be short-lived and it would be deadly in the end to the Republic and to me and to our stations. I know I could say certain things that could double my ratings. I know it. I could take The Blaze and overnight, and I could get a ton of people to write it easily. And overnight, I could take The Blaze and I could turn it and I could double the clicks overnight. That's not the right thing to do. The right thing to do is take time and look and say, how do we change the conversation and go play and talk to the people who on both sides don't want to feel this way? And Dennis Prager, Adam Carolla just said it about Dennis Prager. Look, he's a very religious guy, and I'm an atheist, and we don't have a problem with each other. That's Dennis Prager and Adam Carolla. He has respect for the wisdom of the man. The problem is, we look at this problem and we say, well, how am I going to get people to Elizabeth Warren? You can't talk. No, you're not talking to Elizabeth Warren. No.
They're, of course, the loudest ones on the other side, so that's what everyone focuses on.
Right. Don't. If the people are in those 10 or 20 yards at the end zone, get to the other end zone. If the left and the right are both battling in that end zone, you're not going to be able to talk to those guys.
You're making me so uncomfortable with the continued analogy from football.
Yeah. Then come up with an, okay, I got one. I got one.
All right.
You're at a party, and you don't have any idea how you got to this party.
The only thing you know less about the sports is parties.
Well, no, because he's at least had experience with parties.
Yes,
in the
drinking.
Past.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're sitting there at this party, and you don't know how you have been invited because Susan Sarandon and Barbara Streisand and Elizabeth Warren are over in one corner. Uh-huh. Yep. And then in the other corner, Alex Jones, give me three people on this side that are just, lobbing Molotov cocktails.
Ann Coulter
and what's his name from Breitbart, the crazy European guy.
Oh yeah, Milo.
Milo. Okay, so you got those three, and you were sitting in this meeting or this party. You walk through the door, and you walk into the living room, and you see those three on one end and those three on the other end. Whew. Okay.
And at some point, they're gonna join together and start screaming at each other.
Okay, wait, mm-hmm. Before that, mm-hmm. Do you go over to those three?
No.
No. You don't go over there. And what you do is you try to see, you kind of look around, you walk in and you see those people and those people. And then what I would do at least is I'd look around and at everybody else in the room to see, is there anybody feeling like I am, like, why the hell am I here? And what the hell is going to happen with those two groups? Then those two groups start going at it. Now, there's going to be people in the room that like Barbara Streisand or like Ann Coulter, and they're going to go mm-hmm. and they're going to start to defend, and they're going to start getting wrapped up into that group. And they're going to start yelling at each other and changing each other's minds. And you can't say that. How dare you say that? That's not the truth. And pretty soon you've got maybe 10 or 12 people at the party now attacking each other. I am still I'm in the other room, or I might be in the hallway listening to it and watching it and saying to all the other people that are with me. And I guarantee you there are more people in the party that are standing in the hallway or in the other room going, what the hell is wrong with these people? What do you say we all go have milkshakes? That's where we have to be. There are more people that we may disagree on a lot of stuff, but we don't want anything to do with. That is blood money.
Plus milkshakes are involved.
Milkshakes are involved.
Definitely in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely in.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe I should stop with the sports yes. analogies and go right yes. to the party
and milkshake analogy.
And milkshake analogy.
That one we can relate to.
All right, let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is the USCCA, the United States Concealed Carry Association. Did you grow up around firearms? Have you passed that on to your kids and your grandkids? If you have, you may have heard of the USCCA. They are the first and largest organization dedicated to protecting responsible gun owners before, during, and after a self-defense incident. This is really important work that they do. In honor of Independence Day, the USCCA is celebrating with a great American giveaway. Five people are going to receive $17.76 to buy the gun and ammo of their choice. Now, instead of just drawing one winner, they're going to draw five, which means you have five chances to win the gun and the ammo that you have always dreamt of. Go to protectanddefend.com and enter. Some rules do apply. It's protectanddefend.com. Enter now. And if you're carrying a gun for protection, but you don't have protection, make sure that you read a little bit about what they offer to protect you. Once you fire your gun to protect someone else, who is now protecting you? USCCA. Go to protectanddefend.com right now. Get your chances to win. Protectanddefend.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Well, thank everybody who's participating in the feed today.
Especially Susie, who types in, Glenn's always saying that we'll wake up on Friday and won't recognize our country. And we wake up on a Friday to hear Glenn making sports analogy. The future is here.
I love our audience.
But, but if you wake up on a Friday and I'm making a sports analogy that works, then... the country is fundamentally transformed. Well, me making a sports analogy that doesn't really work, that's the same old country we've been living in a long time.
The funny thing is, you used to say that in like this hypothetical way of like, you're going to wake up on this Friday, you're not going to recognize your country. Now it's like kind of every Friday you wake up and you recognize your country from the previous Friday.
Yeah.
So I assume next week your sports analogy will actually work and will be there.
It could. Mm-hmm. It could. We should prepare one just as a kind of an inside joke when the country's gone to hell.
Oh, yeah.
And they're ready to round everybody up. I'll do a sports analogy that works. And people will be laughing.
That'll be hilarious. Yeah.
By the way, the weekend is here. A Friday is here. Should I go see Transformers in theaters?
I'm not going to tell you.
Because, I mean, your opinion on movies is very important to me. Yeah, it is, in that I know the opposite should be taken into account heavily.
Okay. Well, I go to movie like Transformers. I haven't liked any of them. I mean, they're fun. Mm-hmm. They're fun.
That's what they are.
But I don't think any of them have really been good for a myriad of reasons. So it's not like I'm going because like, oh, this is a great movie. They're fun. Mm-hmm. They're fun movies. I liked this Transformers, and I think everybody hated this Transformers. I like this Transformers as much as I've liked a couple of the others.
Just fun and
it's fun. It's absolutely stupid. Mm-hmm. I like the tie into history, although don't think about it too much. Okay, don't think of the actual script and the things that are going
Ignore
on.
Most
too
of
much.
The movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, lots of explosions, some history. It brings you back to Merlin and King Arthur, which I think is lots of fun.
I'm going this afternoon. Can't wait.
Don't pay attention at all to the Transformer robot that came during the medieval times that is now the butler, because why is he steampunk and yet all the ones that came? Don't think about it.
I'm more interested in the fact that you seem to pronounce with the emphasis on trans, making it more of like a Caitlyn Jenner Transformers.
Isn't that what that is?
Well, I say Transformers.
Yeah,
right?
No.
I put it on the second. So.
Autobots.
Autobots.
Oh, okay. I have changed.
This is... the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.